Welcome to Iteration, a podcast about programming, development, and design. Hey, my name is John, and I'm a software developer for a home services startup, and I am joined, as always, by JP. Hey, JP.
Hey, John, how's it going? So I'm JP. I'm a software developer at a small analytics startup, and today's conversation is going to be a fun one because it's inspired by a text message that I got from one of my former colleagues. And it's around tech stack. So just to give you a little bit of context, I have a friend who is starting his own company, his own startup. I don't want to give away the domain because that's not really important here. And he has a couple of developers, one of which is offboarding after they do their initial launch. And so he texts me this question and he says, "Hey, why does a dev tool stack matter? And is it hard for devs to learn other ones?" And that just sparked so many questions in my head. And the first thing I did was I actually took a screenshot of this, and I'm pretty sure I sent it to you. And I was like, "Hey, what do you?"
Yeah, you did. Like instantly.
What do you think of this? And so I think it's interesting because I was wondering, like, what is the reason that my friend is asking me why tool stacks matter? And obviously the answer here is because his developer is leaving and he wants to know that, like, it's going to be okay and that it's going to be not an impossible task for him to find another developer.
Yeah, right. I think it's interesting. I think that's one of the number one reasons people want to know this, because you're meeting developers and you know a developer and it's like, "Hey, can you help me with my React app?" And they're like, "Oh no, like I only do PHP." And then it kind of shuts down the conversation. I think there's that side of it, like seeking developers. I think there's the other side of, for a newer developer, mm-hmm. kind of jumping off previous episodes, there's a lot of pressure to like make the right decision in what tech stack you're going to learn. And I think it's worth considering, does it even matter? Does the tool stack matter? And, you know, I also think if you're a founder trying to select what tech stack to work in, if you're not necessarily technical or you just kind of have a loose co-founder, it's just like, "Oh, what do I even pick in terms of building a tech stack?" So I kind of want to address the question from all sides. Why does a tech stack matter for a founder? For a specific product build, why does it matter when trying to hire a dev? Can I train a dev a different tech stack? Or why does it matter if I'm trying to learn? Which way do you want to address this? I think an interesting jumping off point could be you, JP, because you started recently a job at a startup. They're in stealth mode. But you accepted a role for Vue and you weren't necessarily a Vue developer. So in a lot of ways, in your case, the tech stack didn't matter because within a week or two, you are fully proficient and contributing to the code base. So can you speak to that experience a little bit and if you feel like that relates or not?
Or maybe the fact that I was able to onboard means that tech stack does matter, right? Because what if they used like Svelte or like Backbone.js, or if they were like, "Let's make this an Angular," right? So
yeah.
I think if you put on your CTO hat or you put on your engineering manager hat and you say you're at the crossroad where you're like, "We can either go this route or this route," I think the question you have to ask from a hiring perspective is like, "Will I be able to hire developers even if they don't know this specific stack? Like, will it be easy for them to onboard?" And I think in that sense, it does matter, because had they chose something that was like really obscure or maybe something that's not as easy to pick up, it could have really hindered them from finding someone and like getting someone a job offer.
Yeah, it's interesting because it speaks to Vue's community and documentation and just ease of use. It also speaks to your talent and skill level and previous skills you were able to apply. So let's talk to this for a second. If you know one tech stack, can you as a developer learn another tech stack? Or can I hire a developer who doesn't know my tech stack and can they learn my tech stack? So obviously the answer is it depends, TM. Obviously that's the answer. But I do have some specific notes on this. So I have more than once hired a Rails developer to work in my agency who was not a Rails developer at the time.
Oh, interesting.
I said, "You know what? I'll hire you. I'm like looking at your Next.js code. I'm looking at your React code. Like, you have strong development patterns and knowledge of what this shit is. You understand UX, UI. You know how to ship a code. You understand the MVC approach. Like, there is these fundamentals that apply everywhere. And Rails is pretty simple once you understand those fundamentals to be able to pick it up in the specific Ruby syntax. It's one of the easiest syntaxes out there. And so I have more than once successfully onboarded developers who have gone from zero Rails experience or like one tutorial in less than a month, getting them very productive on the team. So I, as an engineering manager, I don't disqualify you instantly if you don't have experience in my specific tool set. I'm looking for the lower level skill sets. So that said, to some degree, tech stack doesn't matter because it's just specific syntax. Do you have any thoughts on that?
It's funny because you can kind of say the same answer with opposing views, right? Because like on one hand, tech stack doesn't matter because you can onboard somebody. On the other hand, it does matter because that piece of technology needs to be something that people can learn. So it's kind of like yes and no. It's literally yes and no. It doesn't matter.
Sure. Well, let's assume for a second that tech stack matters less when it's one of the big five, let's say. You know, it's React, it's Vue, it's a generally widely accepted tech stack that's strong documentation, strong community support. It's not something that's like total, it's not Elm, you know? It's like really hard to hire against and switch into, and it's something different. I don't know if Elm is. I'm just picking some more obscure framework. Or Dart, you know, like there's not a huge, huge community for Dart in the same way that there is for React. I know there's a giant community for Dart. It's an amazing language, yada, yada, yada. So I think it matters less if it's one of the bigger frameworks to some degree.
Yeah.
And I think as well, like there's this idea of soft skills and kind of computer science or web development fundamentals that translate everywhere. If you're pretty good with HTML, CSS, that's going to be useful to you in any web development framework and any native frameworks even, because there's a lot of similar concepts in terms of style sheets and structure and a lot of those different things. So I would argue that as a developer learning, just pick a framework, like don't overthink it. Pick one of the big ones, probably. A lot of places you want to work, what they're using, probably pick one like that. That makes a lot of sense. And then really focus on those fundamentals and the translatable skills. Try to think through something when you learn it. Is this something that I can apply to other frameworks and skills? And then really double down on that. Things like domain design, testing, UX, like all these things are incredibly useful.
Okay, let me throw a wrench in that really quick. And let's... for once, let's maybe not just agree with each other back and forth, because I do have an opposing argument I think is potentially interesting. Is I would maybe argue that in some ways the tech stack is important because, okay, let me just speak to my friend whose question kickstarted this whole conversation. So his tech stack right now is full stack Node.js with React. And to me, if he was asking me specifically, hey, does tech stack matter, because he was trying to poach me, to me, tech stack does matter. Because if that other engineer is leaving and I have to jump into a full stack Node.js app, can I be proficient? Yes. Can I implement new functionality and debug things? Yes, of course. I mean, you can spend X amount of hours reverse engineering anything you want, but am I going to be implementing things with Node.js best practices? Maybe not. And because I don't have a Node.js senior dev to like, you know, crush my PRs and tell me that I'm like writing really shitty code for this like Node.js paradigm, that is going to all of a sudden become like an unmaintainable mess. Because let's say I offboard and all of a sudden you have this Node.js app that was made by someone who's like a Node.js developer, let's assume so. And then I came in and maybe I muddied things up and I did some like really terrible anti-patterns. And then now he's looking for another person to come in.
It's a great point.
Who may or may not see the code and be like, I'm not a Node.js developer either. And so I'm just adding on to this. Or they might see the code that I wrote and be like, what the fuck is, what is all of this? And then so it becomes, to me then, it becomes the question of like, at what point do you rewrite the app? Right.
Yeah.
Or like at what point, because like everything depends, because he's in a situation now where he is like handed off this app and there is no one really to like guide this thing and be like, I'm enforcing all of these like best practices.
Sure. Yeah. I think, and again, like, it very much depends, but I think in that specific situation, like, obviously there's no senior dev to enforce that. Like, so in my example of hiring Rails devs with no Rails experience, mm-hmm. but they're great developers in other areas, I was able to leverage their soft skills and general technical knowledge into this new approach and coach them in that and kind of adopt the best practices within that framework and guide them into that. So, like, but again, like, that's not, it's not necessarily tech stack there that's the problem that you're describing. It's not the tool. I guess my main point that I'm getting at is it's not like if I have to go code tomorrow in React that I'm going to be completely lost, even though I'm a shitty React coder, because I have a lot of strong web development and technical skills that I can bring to that framework to start writing code. And so I guess, like, does switching to a different tech stack matter? Yes, of course it does. If I'm a writer and I switch from writing on a typewriter to a keyboard or a laptop, it's going to slow me down. And that's even less of a translation. This is way more of a translation. I was trying to think of metaphors and thinking of this because I'm the metaphor king. And the one I came up with is, like, in welding, there's this idea of, like, MIG welding versus TIG welding. And it's just fusing two metals together. And if I'm not a welder, I don't understand any of the differences between these two things. But there is literally completely, fundamentally scientific differences between these two types of welding. And it's really uncommon to have a welder who does both of these types of welding. Like, you're either a TIG welder or you're a MIG welder. And of course, like, there's fundamentals that transition and that you can do that. But, you know, if you're like an aerospace TIG welder, you're not going to go be a MIG welder and vice versa. But it's funny because, like, as a layman, I'm just like, I don't fucking weld the thing. I don't know MIG versus TIG. This doesn't matter to me. And so it is one of those areas where, of course, there's some fundamentals that translate, but it's actually like a totally different job in a lot of ways. And I think that's what this is. And it's hard because I'm trying to think about, you have this question here, like, how do non-technical people see this? And I think that welding example is one that I could hold up as, like, hey, maybe this is a way that people can think about this. But I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on how non-technical people see this? Because, like, I can't tell you how many times I've been asked to, like, oh, can you write some Ruby code on my Shopify app? Oh, that actually is a decent example. I've been asked things like, hey, can you write this Ruby code in my WordPress site? And it's like, no, I can't do that. I can't, like, that's not how it works. Or, you know, can you write PHP on my Squarespace site? And it's like, no, I can't do that. Like, those two things, like, are just fundamentally different. So there's obviously a disconnect there. Yeah. I've been talking too long.
Yeah. I think that it's like, my friend who had messaged me this just couldn't fathom why it would be a problem or why I would even have, like, any resistance. Cause I was like, dude, honestly, like, Could I work in a Node.js app? I could, but, like, I'm kind of at the point in my career where I just don't want to, because it's like it's a hassle for me. And yeah. I think that was kind of like a, wait, like, why though? Like, what's the difference?
And it's all just like black screens and white text, right?
Right,
like,
yeah.
What? You're just hacking either
it's
way.
It's just code. And I think yeah. I think it's like that classic meme of, like, oh, you work in tech, so you could fix my internet kind of a thing, right? Like,
oh, for sure.
I think that there's just this, like, blanket, you can write code, so therefore you can do this mm-hmm. thing that I have.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I don't think that they comprehend that level of granularity and, like, in the differences between even just, like, maybe even, like, front-end development versus, like, back-end development. I don't know. I don't know mm-hmm. what it's like to see through that lens, but I'm yeah. sure you get that question all the time.
I get questions like this around this all the time, and it's hard to explain because, like, if you're a mechanic, there's no fundamental difference between, like, fixing a Toyota and a BMW. Like, obviously, they're specialists, and people understand that, but even a mechanic could probably, like, figure out a little bit that's wrong with a helicopter. But in our example, like, it's even more confusing because they're both websites.
Yep.
So, like, if you can do Ruby on Rails, like, why can't you fix my WordPress website? It's like, A, I don't want to. I could probably figure it out. But B, it's just a totally different machine. Like, you're asking me to work on rocket ships when I work on cars, like vintage cars. It's just, they're totally different things. But I think it's hard for people who don't understand that they're different to see the difference, because it's a website. And it's hard too, because laymen don't even understand the difference between a website and an app. Like, what's right. an app? What's a website? Like, it's such a blurry line between all this shit, and I don't blame them for being confused.
I tried to come up with a metaphor that he can maybe relate to, because he does a lot of marketing, and so he's in, like, marketing tools. And I was almost like, yeah. well, think about the difference between, like, SendGrid and MailChimp. And then I realized that was a terrible analogy because, like, at the end of the day, he could probably figure out just how to be productive and do the same things in both tools. So I was like, well, that's not really, never mind, that's not really a good analogy. But yeah. It's tough. Like, it's hard to come up with something that lets them truly understand that, like, this is why there's so much resistance and this is why it's hard to find specific developers for specific tool sets when you're looking for, like, looking for just that.
Yeah. And so I think we've addressed this idea of, like, for hiring and onboarding people into your team. And I think in some sense, like, as a founder, selecting a tech stack for your company. Let's talk about that a bit more for a second. So we've already had this idea of, like, picking the wrong tech stack is going to make hiring really difficult for you. So, you know, if you pick something that's really, really hot, you're going to have to pay a lot more money because there's a lot of demand for developers on that. And if you pick something that's a little bit more old and boring, you might be able to get developers, lots of them, and cheap, but they might not be the excited, really hot developers. Like, there's this kind of balance between it. Because if you build something in PHP, there is scores of people who will write you PHP or Java or lots of other just kind of older stalwart frameworks. Like, there's tons of people. Java developers are a dime a dozen. You can find tons of them. But at the same time, like, you're not going to be attracting necessarily the newest breed and top tier developers to do Java work. And so it's really trying to balance between that right kind of selection. And for me, the answer is always Ruby on Rails. No, I'm joking there, obviously. But do you have any thoughts there? Like, what advice would you give to a founder or someone looking to do their own startup, JP, in, like, picking the right stack? That's such a hard question.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, because I can't think of this outside of the context of myself. Because to me, when I answer this question or people ask me, like, what tech stack should I use, I'm like, dude, honestly, that's kind of, like, irrelevant, but let me pitch you on what I can offer you. Like, if you sure. like, if you want this app done, it's going to be done with Ruby on Rails, and if you want a little bit of, like, JavaScript, I also happen to know React. I'd prefer not to write it, but if you want, like, some amount of complex UI interaction, we can do that. But, like, if you're asking me to help you choose, like, between this and that, I'm always going to tell you what I want, because that's going to be the most efficient for me. And I know that's not always, like, the best business decision, right? Because then I have to think, like, is this a long-term project for me or is this a short-term project for me?
Yeah.
But
I think for me, it goes back to part of the low code, no code recommendations from last week. Like, prototype it, prototype the shit out of it, do what you can without a technical founder. And I think to get a technical founder, because I think the best advice I'd give to someone who's trying to start a startup is get a technical co-founder, even if you're technical, because having someone who is competent in a language or framework attracts others who are competent. Like, they're going to have a network and a community of people around them that know that language or framework. So it's more about finding a great developer and then trusting the tool they're selecting for it, more so than, like, here's the framework, now I'm going to go find developers for this framework. That's what I would recommend for you to do. But it's hard, because it's really this catch-22. Like, if you use the new hotness, you're going to be paying through the nose for developers. And if you use the old stuff, it's like you might get developers cheap, but it's probably not the newest, most modern, sexy way to do it.
Yeah.
So it's so hard to balance those things.
I think another problem here is something I think most companies wouldn't like to admit, and not many people are talking about, is that when you start a company, it's like, let's say we're going to go with Node.js and React. It's almost like people don't want to ever throw away work, right? Because it's the, what's that fallacy I'm thinking of? It's like the
sunk cost.
The sunk cost fallacy, right? Because at the end of the day, we spent all this time writing this React and Node.js app, and all of a sudden, we're at this crossroad where, you know, someone's pitching us to rewrite it, or we can't find developers that... Let's pretend that we couldn't find any React developers, and maybe the reason is because of the tech stack. But let's say someone came along who was, like, a long-term hire, and they were like, I don't write any React. And they're like, well, I want to convert this app to be a Vue app, for example, right? And it's like, do you let them rewrite it in Vue and you know, invest in them as a person, and that they're going to be, like, the owner of this long-term? Or do you just, like, make them learn React? And in my head, it's almost just like, if you're going to invest in that person, just have them rewrite it, which sucks and is not the answer you always want to hear. But at the same time, it's like you have to take that software that you built, and the product of it isn't the code that you wrote or, like, the MVP that you have. It's kind of the learnings in building it, and the things that, like, your customers gave you feedback on, and knowing, like, what you can improve on if you were to do it again. But obviously that all depends. I'm not telling you that like you should always rewrite the app because I think that's
I think that's a shitty approach.
but I also think
looking at your sunk cost is a horrible default. I think in two ways. I think first, if you are working in a code base or you're the kind of owner for a code base, you're the founder of a startup, thinking always in terms of like, I have to preserve what I've written mm-hmm. is a really dysfunctional way to think about it. I think number two is when you're thinking about what you're learning as a developer, always thinking in terms of, well, I can only do Rails because I've only ever learned Rails is a really self-limiting and just shitty way to think about it. Like that's a shitty way to view the world. And so like with those specific things, I'll give a quick example. Like when I first was learning software, I started with Python and Django because like when I Googled what programming language to learn, everything was Python at the time. I don't remember when this was. It was like 08, I think. I don't know when it was. 2012. I don't know. Anyway, when I was first learning, it was Python. And I spent months learning Python and Django and like got my first thing stood up and like figured it out. And honestly, I hated it. I hated it so much. I hated Python. I hated Django. I hated web dev in general. And then like I kept having this nagging feeling on the back of my mind of like, I need to learn Rails. Like I watched DHH's blog demo. It looks awesome. Like this seems like a fit for me. This is what I need to do. But that sunk cost, because I had already invested so much time in Django and PHP, not in Django and Python, it really like stopped me and it blocked me from doing that. And I think that it's just a bad way to live in terms of thinking about sunk cost, because then I jumped to Rails and it's one of the best things I ever did.
Yeah, isn't it funny that everything is like a balance? Because like I'm kind of at the point where I'm not going to take on any project that isn't Rails because it's like not it's not worth my time, you know?
Yeah. And there was a season for my life like I was seeking other projects besides Rails. Like I wanted React Native. I wanted some other stuff that was going to stretch me more. I did a Vue project just cuz I wanted to make sure that I wasn't too pigeonholed to Rails, but you know. And now I think more than ever, I'm more of a Rails developer than I ever have been in my career. But let's talk about the sunk cost, not in terms of learning, like my little Django example, but I think more so for a tech stack. So mm-hmm. we have both taken an existing app and completely replatformed it. So you did it with our dead horse example of WizTutor. So you actually, I remember this is one of the first things that you did like as a software dev that I was ever aware of. There's this story where I met JP and he was a graphic designer. I knew him for a while and like we were getting along and I kind of knew him. And then one day he's like, oh yeah, I write code now. And it was like a year after I met him and all of a sudden he was this like amazing Rails developer and learning React. I was like, what the fuck just happened? It was crazy. But so JP just pops up with a little startup we were working on. He's just like, you know what? I'm going to rewrite this Angular app. This thing's shit. I'm going to rewrite it in React Native. I'm just going to do the whole thing and I'm just going to knock it out. And the guy just freight trained it and completely rewrote the app from Angular to React Native. So I have a couple questions, JP. Yeah. First, why the hell did you replatform this thing? And then second, do you have any thoughts on that replatform if you do it again? And like in general, why rewrite?
Yeah. See, there's just so many... We have to set the stage there a little bit more, which is like this was the first, because I had contributed a little bit to the Rails app before that, and this was like when React Native was like just becoming a thing. And for the context of our viewers out there, the state of our mobile app was in total disarray, right? In fact, it wasn't even one mobile app, it was like three, because we had a tutor app and we had a student app, and then we had like the Android version was different, and then we had the iOS version.
There was four apps, so because there was Android, iOS, tutors, and students. There was four different apps. It was like the separate apps, and it was a total clusterfuck. And it was built on an API that was shit that I built. It was totally nasty.
Yeah. And so at that point, it was like, well, we can do all these changes that Justin wants, but it's going to be tough because actually, I think some of the apps were actually written in iOS by Dale, and then we had this like, we had the Cordova Ionic. Like Angular thing that was like for students.
I forgot
students.
We actually had a native app, the first version. It was literally iOS native. Holy hell. Wow.
And there were just all these things that Justin wanted, and it was like, well, we don't have any developers to do it. And so it just seems like the logical thing to do was for someone to go in and write a single app to rule them all. But I do remember there was a little bit of resistance there. It was like, should we rewrite it? Because then that's going to take some amount of time, right? And we do have a working app. It's there. Why can't we just like invest maybe that month that you're going to start like bootstrapping things and rebuilding it, just like learning how to code in that specific framework and making these additions. And I think if I was further along in my career, maybe I wouldn't have done the rewrite because it wouldn't have been worth the time, right? But because I was so new and I didn't really know my way way around different technologies, it was like the only option for me really to contribute was to just rebuild this thing. Like, there was literally no two ways about it. But would I do it again? Honestly, like, it depends, because I was recently, a couple months ago, on another project where there's an existing PHP app, and it's like really super old school, and it's written, it was mainly written by this this dev shop that is no longer in the picture, and we can't contact them for any questions, and the code is like, there's typos in the classes, and things are just, it's crazy. And my first initial, my knee-jerk reaction when I first got brought on to consult for this project was, oh, I'll just rewrite this thing in Rails. And I actually did start rewriting this thing in Rails, but there were so many edge cases that I just couldn't account for. And more as I got deeper into the project, I was like scared, because this was like an app that was like making money. And like, if we flipped the switch to my app and all of a sudden conversions dropped like a ton, I would feel like insanely responsible and be like,
sure,
why the hell did I do that? And so what I did, I had to implement this feature, which was like integrate PayPal, which seems easy, but in a legacy app was maybe the hardest thing I've ever had to do.
And the PayPal API is not straightforward
at all. This PHP app, I had to literally unwind it and reverse engineer the whole thing and learn PHP before I even wrote a single line of code. But that only took me like a week of heads down work to finally understand how to do that, because I was able to understand like, oh, this talks to this. And it's not like it's MVC or anything, but it's just like classes talking to each other. And I was able to like find a feedback loop that helped me reverse engineer it. And that helped me like ship this feature in much faster time than rebuilding the entire app. But like, would I be able to do that earlier on in my career? Obviously no, because I rebuilt WizTutor's mobile app from scratch. But I think it really just depends where you're at and how comfortable you are in a technology that like you've never seen before.
For sure. For sure. I do want to call out, I think my default answer to the question of should I rewrite would be no, don't rewrite.
100%.
I think rewrite should be the exception, regardless of your language or framework that you're using. Like, use what you've got, don't rewrite it. However, I will say, if you're going to do a rewrite, the thing is, like, it goes back to this idea of like, what is the hard part of software? The hard part of software is figuring out what to build, not necessarily executing the build. Like, getting the code on the screen and getting the code to the database, like storing data and changing data, that's not really the hardest part of our jobs. And like, I will continue to preach that in 2020, the hardest part is not writing the code, it's figuring out what to write. And so there is this element of, because let me give the quick example of my replatform I did. There was a Shopify app that was really successful, but they sold CBD products and they sold them nationally. And Shopify was like continuously threatening to deplatform them because it's like this legal gray area of CBD products. And so I got involved in this project to replatform this giant e-commerce store. They had lots of products and they were pretty successful. Replatformed through a fully custom Rails e-commerce build. That way they're all self-hosted and they don't have to worry about Shopify kicking them off. So we built on top of Solidus. It was a really cool project. Solidus is a Rails like engine. But what was interesting is it was a totally different approach to a standard Ruby on Rails project, because normally I'd be like, okay, what problems are we trying to solve? Like, talk about it in terms of jobs to be done and try to really prioritize and keep the scope. But this was more like, literally clone this thing, but I need it to not run on Shopify. I need it to run on Rails. And it was amazing how fast we were able to do that using Rails. And because all of the questions were answered, if we had any question on how something should work, like there was no user research, we literally just went and used it, saw how it worked and cloned it. And so it really was exponentially cheaper than building a from scratch e-commerce build, even in a comfortable domain, because there was all these edge cases of what products are available in what states and all this other logic of the whole product, their discount logic and more, that was just solved. We had all the hard parts done. And so I would say it was probably 4x cheaper than a straight up total rewrite of this thing out of the blue. And so I do want to call out that there is this idea of like, what's actually hard? And what's actually hard is like all those things. It's not actually writing the code if it's... But the hard part, though, is I think oftentimes a rewrite is not just a rewrite. It's also like a complete new rework and redesign of all the features. And, oh, man, I don't know if I would recommend that.
This is the question that I hear every time from a stakeholder when the question of, like, should we redo this? Like, in general, should we redo this? This question is always asked, and it's this. It's, can we reuse any of the existing stuff we've
yeah.
made? And it's like, yeah. you know, sometimes, yes, we can, but, like, that goes back to the whole sunk cost fallacy thing, right? It's mm-hmm. like, we can reuse stuff. We can reuse our learnings and how to yeah. make it, like, better. But I think it's just, like, so hard to throw away work for some people. And I get it. Like, it's easy for me to, like, preach, like, don't, you know, don't get bogged down by the sunk cost fallacy. But, I mean, at the end of the day, I'm not the one that's, like, I don't know, that has money to lose because of it.
It's true. It's true. And I've been there, man. But I also love deleting code. It feels really, really good to delete code. So I'm not sure. Let's speak to the kind of last one here, which is like, if you're looking to learn a framework, how should I think about picking a framework and having to learn a new one? Do you have any thoughts there, JP?
Set the stage a little bit for me. So like, is this like as a greenfield project or like I'm starting a new company, how do I choose?
Oh yeah. Sorry about that. So like, let's go back to a couple weeks ago when we were talking to your friend who wanted to break into tech.
Sure.
And he might be struggling. Someone like him or her might be struggling to figure out what is the best framework to learn. What should I learn? Does tech stack matter when it comes to learning web development? And I guess the question there is, A, how do they pick what tech stack to learn? And B, does it matter if they learn the wrong one? Should they have this fear over learning the wrong tech stack?
Mm-hmm. I think the answer to that is to just... So in the context of like I'm breaking into tech, I think what you have to do is you have to narrow your focus and just stick with it. So like if I were to go back to 2008 or whatever, 2012, and meet John Salzarulo and be like, hey, this is my unsolicited advice, I would be like, hey, stick with Python and just keep going at it because like mm-hmm. maybe you'll break through and, you know, ignore all the noise of like, is Python still being used? Do people still use Django? Are companies right. still using Django? Like, who cares? Because you'll learn like good software practices and how to write code and understanding like how the life cycle of like a website and how websites communicate with servers and yada, yada, yada. So I think all you really have to do is like, just stay focused on that like one thing and really invest your time into it, and then the rest will come.
I think that's really good advice, and I couldn't agree more. Like, stick with the thing that makes most sense to you and that you're being productive with and that you're like that you're comfortable with, and you start learning. And I do think you're totally right. If I would have stuck with Django, my career wouldn't look any different today because I would have had that first like semi breakthrough build out that I would have done. The framework wouldn't have mattered, and ultimately I probably would have made similar connections and similar, like, I totally agree with that, and I think that's valid. I also think it's worth considering looking at the types of companies you want to be at and looking at their tech stacks. However, also, like, there's a reason why Facebook uses the tech stack it uses and why your new startup shouldn't use that framework. It's because, like, they have 10,000 engineers and your new startup's probably going to have 3. So it depends on what you're trying to accomplish, whether you're looking to be an entrepreneur, whether you're looking to go get a job at the big, you know, the big five tech companies. What did you call the big five tech companies when we were texting today?
Fang.
I love that. It was Facebook, Apple. What is it? Give me this.
Amazon, Netflix, and Google.
Fang. If you want to work at the big Fang, like, you probably need to learn one of their tech stacks. Like, that goes without saying.
Yeah. It's that right context matters. Like, if you want to get a job, learn JavaScript because that's like the job market is hot for JavaScript. Should you learn Rails? I mean, yeah, there's a lot of startups that are bootstrapping apps with Rails today, even though people on the internet might tell you otherwise. Is it safe to learn Java? Probably. I'm sure there's hundreds and hundreds of jobs.
There's plenty of Java work out there.
Yeah. They might just not be like sexy startups. So it really just depends like where you want to land. And I think a good way to do that, my friend John, who's also been on this podcast, was like, I learned React because I saw that like Redfin had that on their like requirements, so I just like learned React, and so that like that was the answer for him.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. I think that's a good approach. So to kind of summarize the whole thing, like, hey, why does a dev tool stack matter? It matters for a lot of reasons that we've talked through. I think, yes, it does matter. It matters more than it not mattering, if I was to have that different conversation there. But I think it matters based on the context. You know, for an engineering team, it really depends on how you're trying to attract and hire and onboard talent. So that's a big consideration if you're running an engineering team or an organization or a founder out there. If you're learning a tech stack, the tech stack matters because it depends on where you want to work and what types of things you want to do. But I think it's important important to remember in the broader world, you have more soft skills and fundamentals that you're going to learn regardless of the tech stack you learn. You could learn vanilla JavaScript, HTML, CSS, and probably build some amazing shit and learn a lot of stuff doing it. And I think, too, when you're thinking about hiring people, does their tech stack they currently know matter? Yeah, you're going to have some friction in getting them onboarded. And depending on your tech stack, you might have some struggles. But also, don't throw them out the window, because there's probably a lot of soft skills and a lot of other technical knowledge they could bring to the table if they have a lot of experience there and are really enthusiastic about your company. So I think that would be my quick recap to that question. And I hate to say it, but again, the answer is it depends.
And it also depends, like, on who you are. You kind of touched on it, but it's like, are you coming from at this from the perspective of an engineer, an engineering manager, or a non-technical founder? Like, who are you? It really depends. Like, the answer to that depends on that as well. Just so many factors.
Couldn't agree more. Let's jump into some picks.
Okay. I don't really have a great pick. The pick I have is this.
Nice.
Is this? I mean, it's a cool pick, I guess, but it's just kind of boring. It's this library called, I think it's Redaxios. All it is a wrapper around Axios. So if you're a JavaScript developer, I'm sure you've heard of Axios.
Yeah, Axios for sure.
Which is just a wrapper on Fetch. But I think the original Axios was written on top of like XHTML or XML HTTP or something like that. And so I think Redaxios keeps the Axios API, but is Fetch underneath the hood, I think. I don't know. I haven't clicked on this link in a while, but it was like the top GitHub star, so that was my pick.
Nice. And so what's the premise here? Like, why would I use Redaxios over Axios?
I think it's smaller than Axios, and it keeps the same API. So all you would have to do is import from Redaxios instead of Axios, and your code would stay the same.
Oh shit. Yeah, and it's 800 bytes. So it brings the library significantly smaller. No wonder this is hot. That makes a ton of sense. That's awesome. Very cool. My pick this week is debuggers. So whatever language or framework you're using probably has a way to do debuggers. So specifically in JavaScript, there's a bunch of ways to implement debuggers. I'm not going to go into that detail, but I'm specifically calling out in Rails and Ruby, Pry, binding Pry is the debugger that I use. But I never knew about this idea of Pry navigation. So you can step or next through your code. So I would always do this thing where I'd either put a shit ton of puts everywhere, or I'd put like four binding prys. So like, I want to figure out what my controller is doing, so I put a binding pry there. I want to figure out what the service object I'm calling does in that controller, so I put a binding pry there. And like, that's how I kind of exit until the next binding pry and then inspect the source there. But with this, you can put one binding pry, and by hitting step, it'll just go to the next line of code and kind of pause and let you look into what your system's doing, or to let you call next, and it'll just go to the next method.
Oh.
It's really powerful and has totally changed the way I debug, especially when you're trying to debug like what's going on inside of a gem. Because when you say next, it'll take you to the next line of code, even if that line of code is like in Rails itself or within a specific gem code that you're trying to call. Holy hell, I feel like my debugging game has just like completely increased, way better. And I strongly recommend, if you're a Rails dev, like, check out Pry Nav and start playing with that and just level up from just puts. And there's so much more in the world of debuggers than I ever knew. And also, like, that's a little bit with the, I'm doing WestBoss JavaScript course, and all the JavaScript debugger shit totally blew my mind. I was like, this is awesome. I'm definitely going to leverage this a lot more.
Is this baked into regular Pry? So if I include the gem Pry, or is this like added functionality?
No, it's annoying. You have to include Pry Nav. They split the library a while ago, and I don't know why. Because I've known these exist, but every time I try to use them, they didn't work.
Same here.
And so finally, I just Googled, like, why the fuck does Pry Step and Next not work? And they're like, oh, you got to include Pry Nav. And I'm just
oh my God, that's so funny.
How did I not know this? And I was unwilling to like admit that I didn't know how to properly use Pry forever. And not that I'm an expert by any measure. I'm sure there's even more that this gem lets me do. Like, you can even like mock the next step. So like, you can like pass a flag to like pretend go to the next method, which is like, there's all kinds of really cool stuff. But yeah, just like, take a moment, spend 20 minutes with debugger documentation in your language or framework. It's going to pay off in spades, I promise you.
I cannot tell you how many times I've been pairing with somebody and I put a binding pry in my code and I'm like, oh, I can do next, because this has worked for me before. And then it just like, I get an error. That's so funny.
Yeah, it's super annoying.
Super good pick. Little hot tip, by the way, before we end this, is that if you throw a binding pry in a an iteration, because I recently had to do this. So if you're like looping through like 100 objects and you have a binding pry in there, you can exit that with exit bang. Otherwise, when you hit exit, it will just like go to the next iteration and you'll be like in this
loop. I did not know that one. I always like hard quit with control C, like, and that's how I like hard quit the loop. Exit bang. Damn, we got all kinds of fire going on. I love it. Well, thanks so much for listening. You can visit iterationpodcast.com, learn more about the show, listen to past episodes, kind of support us there. If you scroll to the bottom of that page, you'll see our Twitter handles as well, and you can feel free to follow us or reach out to us there. We love hearing your tips and tricks for the shows, any follow-ups, any mistakes we made. I'm sure there's plenty, but thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate it, and we'll see you next time.
We'll catch you next time. Thanks for listening.